And here we are live. My goodness me, I can't tell you how last minute this has been today.
Is all the audio on?
Audio's on. There are some days when you think that you've got so much time and you just think you can float through this, and then you realise, oh, it's half past ten. We're on soon. And then I'll just change my out of my T-shirt. And you go, what am I going to put on? You're wearing black. So welcome to today's show. I have a co-star, my absolutely wonderful wife, Liz, who's joining me today.
Hello.
And today's show is about our journey getting to this point of attempting to systemize new business generation. So you think, okay, well, that's one part of it. The other part of it is this setup. And every week when I do a show, it's not for the sake of the show, oh, listen to me. I'm attempting to communicate, or I hope I am communicating, that what we're doing is saying, you can do this. Your company can do this. Or rather, you should be doing this. But it's not because, well, I can do it, you should do it. It's got nothing to do with that at all. It's got everything to do with the type of media that we as business owners want to consume when it suits us, not when it's attempted to be rammed down our throats or cold called. So the business community is desperate, I say, for a quantum change in the way that we attempt to generate new business. Fine. So going back, you know, and the point of doing it in this format is that we've been together for 20 years. We met through work. And our kind of our journey starts just after in 2003. It was 2003, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
and prior to that, you know, that I was up to doing different things and trying to work out how to generate business like everybody else. I've been doing this nearly 40 years. And throughout that time, we are told as starters in selling technology, you've got to do it this way. So you listen to your bosses or your peers or whoever, and they tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing. And you just do as you're told. And it gets to a point where it gradually dawns on you, this seems like too much hard work. Not that anybody's, you know, certainly we're not shying away from hard work, but this doesn't seem right. And so, you know, when I think back to, I'm not going to say the date, but a long time ago, you know, cold calling. You think, you know, people look at these types of shows and think, oh, you're just a, you know, you're just another marketer. I hope not. I hope not to be associated with marketers, to be perfectly honest. Having door knocked, cold called in the rain, sleet and snow for days on end, looking to generate new business, and then telephone cold calling as well using the yellow pages. And for, I mean, if you haven't done that, you don't know what you are doing in marketing, because marketing is, I mean, it's all part and parcel of this series that I kind of say that marketing is trying to hijack or has hijacked process, and it's damaging businesses. And so rather than go down that route, I mean, the whole thing about this, I mean, Liz, you tell them where you started in sales and what have you, and okay. Then we'll kind of...
Okay, so... Basically, my first foray into sales was as an estate agent, I think, when I first moved down to London, mm-hmm. in the at the beginning, 1990 it was, but actually I think it started before then. I think I decided, I fancied myself as being in sales a little bit earlier than that. And I moved down to London and worked as an estate agent for a while. And then moved into recruitment sales. And then, and it was at a time when it was, I mean, it's bad now, but then it was really difficult. I mean, we were in a massive recession. Everybody was in negative equity. And it was a real challenge ringing up companies when you've got, you know, you've got your index cards and you're working through them, trying to get jobs on when there were no jobs to be had.
I forgot about them. Yeah,
so, yeah, so that was pretty much the initial part of it. And then I think it was probably about 95, I think. I'd gone back into working in admin again. And then in 95, with my ex-husband, we were working in, he was selling telecoms. And I remember the first book I ever read on selling was called Telephone Selling. And I thought about this morning. And I thought telephone selling was about selling telephones, not about doing telesales. And I was a bit confused when I was reading the book, going, it doesn't talk about anything to do with telephones. It just talks about, you know, making phone calls and stuff. So that was the first book that I ever read about selling. And so for a while, selling telecoms, my biggest deal, I think, was probably we sold a phone system to the Royal Centre in Nottingham.
Yeah.
And that came about because I had this sheet of paper with the Royal Centre on it. And they had, at the time, they had an old, if you might remember this, anybody watching this that's old enough might remember the BT Monarch phone system. And back in the day then, telephone systems were rented. So you rented them from BT.
Yeah.
And you rented your cables from BT. And I had this conversation with the one of the directors of the Royal Centre. And he said, yeah, we still rent our phone system. And when we worked it all out, they were going to pay less to take out the Monarch, which was a 20-year-old system then, put in a new phone system. So that was my biggest deal. That was my biggest success, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the funny thing, you know, door knocking and getting through the door, actually someone opens the door and getting a compliment slip from someone.
Passing it through a gap in the door.
Well, no, I mean, I remember my very, very first deal was in South Audley Street, Mayfair.
Oh, yeah.
And the company was called Tide UK. Someone said to me, oh, you'll never forget your first deal. And it's like, yeah, it was Tide UK, and I sold them a photocopier at retail. And I knocked on the door, they opened the door, they gave me a compliment slip, I phoned up, I got an appointment, did a presentation, demonstration, sold the kit, rang the bell, you know, that kind of thing. And it was, I mean, even doing that, I mean, when I think back at it, it was like, what a basic way of getting business.
But it was effective, you know, because my journey in sales then kind of continued. And, you know, we did buy we didn't buy a database. We bought actually a list of 20, I think it was 20 or 30 leads, which I followed up like a dog with a bone. I just at them, and I got a deal from it for a company that used to provide recording media for like the big recording studios like at Abbey Road whatever. And they moved to premises in Maida Vale, not far from Abbey Road. And but I also used to cut ads out of the newspaper because my view was if they were looking to recruit somebody, they weren't going out of business. So and I got a deal that way as well. But kind of obviously life changes and whatever. And then I went eventually selling voice recording solutions, which I absolutely believed in. I believed in what voice recording was all about. And I sold to end users. I sold to dealers.
Yeah,
kind of resellers and to the distribution channel. And it was, I wouldn't say it was tough. I mean, I absolutely loved it. I mean, I was a road warrior. So I did like 40,000 miles in 1 year. Had a huge territory, everything south of Birmingham, Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it because, like I say, I believed in what I was selling.
Yeah.
And obviously that's how we met, through coming to see you, an appointment and whatever.
Oh, shit.
Okay, so...
Because nothing will ever amount from this appointment.
Okay, so, but I had been providing support and I was installing software and so on. And we had this little piece of software which you would install on a regular PC. Yeah. And this guy had been having a problem with his software that he bought not from us or not from a distribution channel, but from this site called NSM Direct. And I talked the guy through, I helped him, I did the support on the phone. When I came off the phone, the girl that had given me the it wasn't a lead, it was just, can you help this guy? And I happened to be in the office that day. And I said, yeah, sure. And anyway, she gave me this and she said, I think you need to, she said, I've looked at this website. She said, it's huge, but they're selling our equipment. I don't know who they are, but they're selling the software and whatever. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll give them a call because they'll now be a dealer as opposed to distributor. So I phoned up and it was just before Christmas. It was the 16th of December, just before Christmas. And I got the name and it was, Nigel Main. So I rang Nigel Main and Nigel Main said, I don't see me now. Call me back in the new year and maybe we can have an appointment then. I said, yeah, sure. So the new year comes around. I make the appointment for the 15th of January, 2003. Somehow it's burnt into my memory. And I said, yeah. And he said, yeah, come and see me. But my boss at the time, he was like, let's just go through your diary. And I was like, I really objected to that. I'm kind of the eye roll thing. And he said, what's this one? He said, you've got an appointment here. It's in Enfield, NSM Direct. And I went, yeah, it's a reseller. Well, why are you going to see him? And I said, because he sells our kit. And I said, and besides, you never know, something great might come out of it. Here we are. And so he was like, yeah, okay. But on that particular day, I had to take a girl with me from the office. And so this girl came with me from the office and we did an appointment in the afternoon. I remember what that one was as well. That was Lewis Day. That was a courier company. So that day is burned into my memory. Did the appointment, tried to show what we were doing online. Obviously, things didn't work out. Unlike when I tried to do the dem, but anyway, that's by the by. Left. Didn't really think any more of it, but I was going to follow it up because it was a lead. And I think I was in the office the following day, which was unusual because I wasn't often in the office because I was on the road so much. And girl in the office says, she said, I got this email. She said, it came through to the general email address because it recognised the domain. She said, they spelt your name wrong. I was like, okay. She said, but Nigel Main, you went to see him yesterday? And I was like, yeah. She said, well, I'm here. She said, he's asking you to go out for lunch with him. And I was like, oh.
I wasn't going there. I was just like, this is about how we met.
Yeah.
Not lunch. Not.
Yeah. So anyway, we did lunch and on the 20th of January.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And a month later, I gave up my job and we ended up working together. And that's what we've been doing ever since, you know. Yeah. We've been working together. But that was my kind of beginnings in sales and kind of really continued in selling until kind of circumstances took over and it became a bit more challenging with the family stuff and whatever. But, you know, never really kind of lost that interest in sales and why and how companies have really struggled to be consistent. I know that it was hard for us in the early days because we just had a small business, but, you know, you get a deal, then I'd have to project manage it and do everything. And so you lost momentum. And yeah. I think it was that momentum that I could never maintain with the telesales.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't hit the phones every day and were making, back then, 120 calls a day, you know, and I might get through to 10 people. So the ratios were tiny.
Mm.
And you might get one appointment a day if you were really lucky. But if you lost that momentum, you go back to it the following week and they go, oh, yeah, we've installed a phone system. Because it was quite a buoyant time, to be honest.
Yeah, it was in those early days. But I think it's always been unsustainable. Always. I mean,
because good days and bad days, but, you know, good days it'd be 100 calls, bad days it'd be like,
but I mean,
calls if you were lucky.
When I think back, you know, it in over in Enfield, you know, I had people working for me, people on the phone. you know, they would do my all telesales for the company. But I was changing the ratios then, and I didn't, only because I knew, you know, I couldn't stay on the phone. Not stay on the phone. I hated phoning. Yeah. Absolutely hated cold calling. I still do. It absolutely doesn't turn me cold. I just despise it with an absolute passion, because it's not what people want to hear. They don't want you phoning up saying, I want to come and tell you how to run your business and get you to buy something from me, like a doctor ringing you up saying, come in and let's see if there's anything wrong with you. I can give you some drugs, or a car mechanic saying, let me have a look at your car and see if I can charge you for something. People are not like that. And because I was running a business, I was looking at this thinking, I don't want to talk to anyone. I wouldn't talk to you. Come see me another time or whatever. It's how businesses operate. But the people that drive telesales, I would say, tend to be, I've got, just for the record, okay, I've got a foot pedal down here because this is a solo operation. There's nobody else in the room. And your chair's just in the way of that. So if I can just move you around a bit so I can get this foot pedal in the right place. Because then once I've got it in the right place and I'm good with that, I can press that one there. And now you can see me here. So this is what you call about being properly live, because it's this process of communicating who your business is. And when people are doing telesales, and the people that are managing or driving BDRs or telesales people, they have never run a company, period. And they go, just do it this way. I did it this way. Look at me. I'm a manager now. Do it this way. And the expectations of them are ridiculous. And I mean, so when we're in Enfield, going back to Enfield, I'm training these people on the phone. And they said, one of them said to me, I'm just not getting anywhere. Can you show me how it's done? And it's like, give me a break. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I've got an app. It's not just telesales, it's telesales with an audience.
Oh, which is even worse. It's like reverse parking with an audience, isn't it?
Oh, shocking. Oh, man. So just give me a name. Give me a name. So she gives me this name. So, okay. Hi, my name's Nigel Main. I'm calling from a local telecoms company, I'd like to speak to Ron Sutcliffe, please, and so on. Go, yes, of course. Put me through. Oh, hi, Ron. I'm Nigel Main, local company. We're doing this, that, and the other. I'd like to come and have a chat with you, see if we can help you do it. Yes, of course. Yeah, great. Yeah, no problem. Next week. Put the phone down. They're all like, I never knew it was that easy. And inside I'm going, I can't believe that just happened. I said, well, you know, some years of experience. And I'm going, my goodness gracious me, this is spectacular. However, it wasn't that the bubble got burst, not by a long shot. So I've gone to the meeting and I've gone up to reception. I said, hi, my name's Nigel Main. I've come to see Ron. And there was this long pause of this receptionist looking at me. And she went, yes, of course. I'm thinking, okay. So I sat and waited, and then the guy that it wasn't office manager or anything. He's like a technical guy anyway. He came up and said, Nigel Main. Yeah, hi, nice to meet you. Come in. So I went to his office, and he had a big stack of brochures and so on his desk. And he said, that's an interesting name. I said, really? He goes, yeah. Our managing director's called Nigel Rain. I think, maybe that's why I got the appointment. And we did, we put systems in all their offices. They got,
It was like, you have me at hello. She's Nigel. She thought you said Nigel Rain instead of Nigel Main.
So yeah, so that was funny. But the whole point of it was that there was no other way of doing the new business generation. You either sent stuff out or you cold called.
Yeah.
And that was it. There was no other alternative. Email is an age thing here. Email wasn't a thing. It was starting to become a thing. I have to say that caveat, starting to become a thing. Yeah. But people, you know, was it 90, late 90s? But because, you know, the thing is that as entrepreneurs, you're looking at trying to look at different ways of doing things, and there's always that kind of burning desire to be able to find something, not just sell the kit, but to find a way of finding new business. We're all superstars in front of the customer. We all know, we know the kit, we know how it works, we know how it's going to impact them, we know everything you need to know about it. But just put me in front of a customer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when we, I don't know what year it was, it was perhaps about 2006, 2007. And we'd kind of focused a bit on voice recording because that was where my expertise was. And there wasn't, and the market wasn't flooded like it was with actually regular telecoms equipment like phone systems and whatever. And we got that brochure printed, if you remember. Oh. So we went to some quite considerable expense printing a really good brochure.
And matte laminate pages.
Yeah, it was great. And we got a temp in to help us envelope it all up. And I think we sent out, I don't know, was it?
Two or 3,000.
2,000 or 3,000 of these brochures, which in theory sounded great. But in practice, we had no means of following it up.
Yeah.
There was no way of speaking to even a fraction of that audience. And not really knowing either whether... I think we probably focused on things like insurance companies and companies that we knew would were probably going to look at voice recording at some point.
Yeah.
But in reality, the fact that we sent out 1,000, however many it was, whether it, I can't remember exactly, but it was actually a lot, and it was too many to follow up. But then not following up again with another letter and another letter and another, because the point is that, you know, like I go back to the Royal Centre. I mean, I had spoken to that guy over the course of maybe 2 years. I'd spoken to him every 3 months, and I just happened to ask the right question at the right time,
yeah.
And it never occurred to me before. And whether they've made it would have made a decision sooner or not, I don't know. But that's not the point. But the point was I kept in touch with him, and sometimes I reached him. Sometimes he was on holiday or whatever.
Yeah.
But I had to go through that process of just keeping in touch. And I had no because I had no other means of actually communicating with him. It was only by the phone.
Yeah.
And occasionally, I think I probably wrote to him or whatever, or sent him a brochure just to keep front and center. But everybody else was doing the same. And there was no differentiation between me and anybody else that was phoning me. And everybody knew they had a monarch, so everybody knew at some point they'd want to change it out.
Because whenever you phone them, you could hear the noise, couldn't you,
when they tapped it? They've got a monarch. They're going to be upgrading at some point.
But at that same time, like late 90s or whatever, there was a guy called...
It was about 97, I think.
Well, this book came out in 97, and his name will come to me, Lambert, American guy. I mentioned it last week, that this guy came out with a book, and he established, foot pedal again, he established that it took 30 attempts to contact, to get through to someone to the point of only becoming familiar. Yeah. So that was 30 attempts. So we're doing this in 2005, 6, whatever, sending out 2000. But the previous number of years working in sales, mail shots were being done for places that I knew, places that I'd worked in and so on. Mail shots were being done, and they were never, ever being done consistently.
No.
So he said it takes 30 touches, 30 messages to become familiar, but that was based upon 10 messages getting through. So one in three. Mm. So that's 25 years ago. Now we've got Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. And then you've got the amount of noise that's across all of those. Mm-hmm. And you've got the competition that you've got with all of the luxury brands as well. So you've got great content, lots of information going out. Now it's 20 to 30 touches are required to become familiar, mm-hmm. and one in 5 to 1 in 10 get through, which means you need something like 200 to 300 messages going out and being distributed across all of those platforms on a regular basis. Mm. And if you said to someone, okay, you've got to produce 100, 200, 300 adverts, they go, you are out of your mind.
Yeah.
And what we've seen even now, you know, is the fact that it works. I mean, the whole thing works, but it's this systemization of doing this, mm-hmm. because the thought of doing loads of adverts surely means a staggering amount of cost, doesn't it? Well, no, it doesn't. And that's the whole point of what, you know, why we're doing all of this and setting all of this up and communicating this, is because things have changed, mm. and they've changed so much so that I have a kind of a bit of a problem with marketing, or rather marketers, because this technology has been around for some years. Mm. YouTube's been around for 10, 15, 10, 12 years, whatever it is. So we've had all this technology. We've had live around for ages. But why aren't businesses adopting it? It's because marketers don't want to adopt it. Mm. It's not for any other reason. I mean, it's so bloody basic. Marketers don't want to do it. They're always too expensive for us. Or I heard from a response from a company that said, oh yeah, oh, very nice, yeah, but we're way too small for that. They're 450 500 person company, we're too small. And it's like, no, you're too small minded you are, or rather you're out of your mind, because, you know, if we here we are doing this. We've got one camera. We've got a camera there on me, camera there on Liz, a couple of microphones, and some kit that broadcasts it and so on. This is, in the overall scheme of things, this is not expensive kit. There's some really expensive kit around. But, you know, most people know that you can get a camera that's got an HDMI plug in it, and you can plug your camera straight into your computer. With an adapter, but you can plug your camera straight into a computer, and that the technology is so accessible and so low cost. Why isn't everyone using it? It wasn't none of our prospects will ever watch you or watch this. That wasn't the response, or that's old hat, or that's a load of rubbish, or that would never work. No, we're too small. So if you've got CMOs of 500 person companies saying we're too small, clearly they're in the wrong job. And that's what these streams, this is what this is all about, is to say, stop listening to them. Stop listening to marketers, because they're getting it wrong. They are destroying your business. And it's a brutal message, but it's true. And that's why businesses, you know, I said this, I don't know, so many times, that businesses that have got this technology, or rather who are selling technology, not got, businesses selling technology, have been doing the same thing over and over again for years, for 20 years, mm. doing the same marketing for the past 20 years.
I think it's even got more difficult, because obviously in the last 3 years we had COVID and everything shut down, and it was really difficult to communicate with people because they were no longer working in their offices, they were working from home, which made it much more difficult to reach people. And I think that because of that, even still now, you know, there are still lots of companies that only have, you know, maybe 60% of their employees in the office at any yeah. one time, yeah. if they've still got offices, because some companies have, like, shed their offices because they're an unnecessary expense,
yeah.
depending how their model is. you know, whether they've got international coverage or not. And I think this is what the great thing about doing this is because it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can communicate to your audience wherever they are in the world. So, you know, we can communicate from here in our, in this office, in this studio, and we have gone international. We've gone worldwide at the click of a button.
Yeah.
Whether everybody can understand what we're saying, you know, whether we're all speaking English or not, well, that's, you know, so, you know, we know that you're probably going to have to do this if you take it up in your business. You're probably going to have to do it in the languages that are, like, whether it's Spanish or German or whatever.
I mean, I mean, that's 100% agree. I mean, it's great that we've got international companies and people to speak different languages, but if you're in England, you speak in English. Get someone from Scotland and someone from London, on the show, so you've covered the country.
But the point is, you can go, you know, from one, whether you're an international company or a local company, it really doesn't matter, because now I think with this, using the live streaming model, it means it really doesn't matter where your prospect is. Your prospect can be sitting at home in his pyjamas with his feet up with the cat on his lamp, watching your live stream in his own time.
Yeah.
Or he can be sitting in his office, you know, with his headphones on so that nobody around him can hear what's going on, but he's watching it or he's listening to it. And I think that is where, you know, you can't do that with telesales, because people can watch this in their own time. They can watch it in their own time zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think having done the really hard work, the phoning, and knowing that the ratios are falling, you know, people don't want to speak to people. And I know, because I take up for the company I work for, I take all of the incoming calls, and somehow I've become the receptionist for the whole company. And I say, I'm sorry, if you're not, if they haven't given you their phone number, then I can't share that with you, and I can't transfer your call, won't transfer your call. And I know that companies are, you know, they're looking for different means of communicating, and even email can easily be ignored. Just delete.
Well, we've been doing this, 6 weeks? This is the seventh live stream. And in 6 weeks, this is the shocker.
Mm-hmm.
In 6 weeks, we have reached over 1,000 companies, people who have engaged with us through either the live stream itself, do it, you know, this thing right now, or the podcast. And so after we do the show, we then, I'm saying it for the listeners, once we've done the show, we then convert it to a podcast. And that goes to a platform we use called Buzzsprout, and that gets syndicated out to, it's like 20 plus different platforms like Spotify, Google, Apple, and so on. And that to think about that level of engagement, I know, you know, most telesales people get blanked. It's a 300-to-1 shot of speaking to, of getting through to someone and finding someone who's interested. And I was talking to a guy that did this, and he said that he would be really rapt, stoked, if he spoke to them for more than a minute. It's like, has it really got that bad? And you think the live streaming is, you know, is an hour or a bit longer. I could speak for England, but that's not the point. The thing is that you've either got something to say or you haven't. But the point is that this is what people do. I mean, there are more searches done on YouTube than are done on Google itself, because people are looking for content they can engage with and look at. And you mentioned about lockdown, you know, people being locked up in their homes. What's their outlet? Well, it's the screen. That's what they're seeing the outside world on. And so that's kind of hit home even more. And I think that that the point of these live streams, like I said right at the beginning, it's not look at our product. It's got nothing really to do with the product,
no.
But it kind of has. But it's to say, if not if, but you should be doing this with your staff, mm-hmm. with people that are in your team, and two or three or four or five or six, it doesn't matter how many, get everybody talking together. Because people on the outside want to see this, they want to hear this, they want to see what you're, yeah. what you're like, how you react in your own social environment, mm-hmm. Because that's how people take on board who and what you are.
Yeah.
But if you're not doing it, how on earth are they going to get to know, like, and trust you?
Yeah, and I think it also depends on how, you know, how creative you are, because, you know, if you just think of this as being, you know, well, this is no more than a webinar. But actually, when you take it, you know, the quality, first of all, is nothing like a webinar.
I'll move my microphone out of your screen, shall I?
Okay, that's fine. I don't mind. But the quality, you know, the production quality is infinitely better. But the thing is, this is having a conversation. You don't have a conversation on the webinar. It's more like a death by PowerPoint.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a Gartner one this morning.
Yeah, so that's one thing. But also it means that you can stream to those people that maybe don't want to sign up for a webinar because they're not ready in their journey to sign up for a webinar. They don't want to be harassed. In fact, I spoke to somebody just the other day who wouldn't even give me his name and telephone number so I could give him some information. He's like, no, because we don't want to be called. So even if they phoned me to ask me for pricing, but wouldn't give me his name and telephone number so I could phone him back to give him the pricing he was looking for.
Yeah.
And so I do think that's a bit extreme, but nevertheless. But
I'll just clarify something for listeners and viewers. I do this as my day job. Do this, set this up, build the website, write for the website, kind of direct and produce or everything. So everything that you see on the website, I've done every single page, every single piece of content, everything. So that's my day job. Liz doesn't have the same day job. Liz works for a software company, an international software company. This is my office and studio, and Liz has her office and studio next door. So we're kind of a...
It's not quite as fancy.
Oh, it's not bad.
I know, but I don't have the sound panels. And the...
We haven't, not yet.
And it's like echo. You walk in my office.
Only at the moment. We're just trying to get your studio set up to be the envy of the whole company. But that's how it works. But the thing is that people don't want to talk to you.
No.
And that there's a reason. Every business owner wants to remain anonymous. And it's not just the business owner that wants to remain anonymous. The employees are told, do not tell anybody.
Yeah.
We don't want to be cold called. It's like the telex, jungle drums, whatever you want to call it. As soon as you say you're looking for something, everybody seems to know about it. How is that? Why is that? Where's my phone?
I don't know. Turn
your phone off then, because someone somewhere is listening. But the problem is that people want to self-educate. They want to self-serve and remain anonymous whilst they establish and work out an ROI. Does, you know, the thing is that we as business owners are not daft. Yeah, that was the wrong pedal. That was the one I wanted. We're not daft. You know, we're running companies. We're doing things. We're technologically astute. We know how to run companies. We employ people. I mean, the most people I've ever employed was 40. I hated it. I couldn't, you know, like managing lots of people. No, that's not me. I do this. So there are other companies with hundreds of staff. And that's a really serious entity. And some salesman comes along and says, I'm going to come and tell you how to run your company. Is that right? You've got the wrong software. Is that right? You know, and it's like what telesales and some salespeople don't appreciate is that business owners are pretty switched on. They probably know about the software that you do and the types of software that you've got. Mm-hmm. They're connected and hooked into their solicitors, accountants and their own small network of people that are senior level and stuff. They know what's going on. Yeah. So if they need something, do you not think they're bright enough, that we are bright enough to work out, I'm going to have a look? But telesales people don't think that. Marketing people. Marketing people don't think that. They think everyone's stupid. And that if it wasn't for marketing, where would everybody be? I think far more profitable without marketing. I mean, I've said it multiple times that, you know, the average tenure of a CMO is 18 months, 9 to 18 months. Why is that? Because they keep getting it wrong. And it's not moving. People are still, and in my opinion, still getting away with it. And because of that, I think that the whole thing about the way that businesses want to engage with a company, with an external company, yes, it's cautious. It's always cautious. I'm not going to tell you my inside leg measurements just because you're asking. Mm. We're not interested. Go away. And that's why that, you know, you take time to look at the website. The website itself is very large. There's about 750,000 words on it, give or take. But the point is that you can self-serve on it, on everything, and decide what you want to do, if you want to do it. And if you want to do it by yourself, or do it, or get us to do it. Getting us to do it is quicker. But the point is that if the likes of Gartner are saying businesses want to self-serve and self-educate, They don't want to be cold called. The whole marketing automation stuff is a waste of time, effort, money and space and so on. It does not work because they don't want to be cold called and they don't want to be emailed, as in spam emailed, and they don't want to fill out a form. Because the whole thing about being anonymous, you chuck a form in front of someone, it says, this is who I am, this is my inside leg measurement, and you're going to call me. I know you're going to call me and I don't want you to. And I think it was in 2014, so nearly 10 years ago, that research was done that said 97% of businesses hated filling out forms because of the knock-on effect. Mm. Demand-based now say it's 100%. And so the guy ringing you up saying, I'm not telling you who I am, is a good case in point. Mm. But that kind of sends me, that says, well, maybe there wasn't the information or accurate navigation on the website for them to find what they needed to. Mm. And so that's why the whole self-serve thing is so critical. And it kind of lends itself, or kind of moves back into this whole...
Self-serve and self-education are kind of side by side, because not all products can be sold off a website.
No.
And they require a degree of technical input. You know, there's quite a number of products that are like that. But so in that case, you've got to think self-education is the key. And if you have a product that is like that, if you have a product that requires technical input because it needs integration with other platforms of the software, whatever, and then self-education is the thing. And you've got to be able to provide enough information for that, for your prospect, that potential buyer, to be able to determine, yes, they know what they're talking about. Yes, I think this could be a viable solution. I know enough about them, because at that level, the price is more academic. It's more about what the product can do for them and how it can help them, and whether it suits their needs. So I think that's where the self-education thing comes in. And yes, people do want to self-serve. If they can buy your product, they want to self-educate and self-serve. So they want to have the ability to do that on your website, generally speaking. And I think certainly for this, you know, doing the live stream, it allows people to dip in. It allows people to listen and effectively kind of build that relationship. I mean, we watch a ton of YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we watch, and we watched one this morning, a lot of what we watch are creators. you know, creative people, you know, doing this or producing videos or whatever. And when you watch a few of those videos or you watch the live streams, you feel like you know them, right? You feel like you've got to know them over a period of time because they become familiar to you. You go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Or he went to Iceland or, you know, he did a shoot over and, you know, he's a documentary.
You know,
we watch one guy, he's Canadian. A lot of them seem to be Canadian.
Yeah.
But he's Canadian. Mm. And, you know, we watch him and you go, oh, yeah, I remember he did that. He did that documentary. And they talk to you like they know you. And yet they've got like hundreds of thousands of followers. Millions. There's one of them that's got like 5.5 million followers.
Yeah, Peter McKinnon.
Yeah. You know, and really good luck to him, but you feel like you know him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, he's putting out content. And then there's another guy that we watch who's a Lumix ambassador who does live streams.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll stream for hours and they'll have big conversations with it. The live streaming community in the US and maybe even takes in a bit of Canada. You know, you get to know them.
Yeah.
And they don't know who we are.
No.
But we get to know them and we get to know a little bit about them, a little bit about their background, you know, why they're doing what they're doing, the ups and the downs of what they've been doing. Mm. And it's a great way of engaging with your prospects because it can be banter. It can be, you know, obviously the serious stuff, but it can be, you know, who is this company? What did they do? What are they, you know... Where are they going? What's
their plans? And the only way that...
And you just bring new people. can bring new people into those conversations, whether they're...
There's no restriction.
Customers or...
Yeah, there's no... There's
senior management or whatever it is.
And I think that you know, of course, it's technology driven and you start to realise how tiny the cost is to do something. So, we're having a conversation here. So if we wanted to... because we've got, I've pressed one of these buttons here. This is so. If you listen to this on podcast, you can't see it.
We'll describe it to you.
So here we go. So we've got the story. We've got the two shot. We've got a shot for Liz and a shot for me. Those can be split up. Which camera to look at now? I'll look at this one. These screens can be set up so that they can be different countries. So you can have someone from Germany, someone from North America, someone from Singapore, all on the show at the same time. Just because you've got Zoom and you've got a couple of little £250 boxes that plug into this and enable you to do it. And you've got to look at it and think, wait a second, this technology, it's not used in B2B. That's the point. Oh. Yeah. And, you know, the creator community are using it. The people that do live events and so on, they know all about it. But it's not being used for prospecting. It's like you could cry. So 6 weeks, 1,000 people, okay? And
across multiple channels. And I think that's the interesting bit about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is across different channels, different media. So we've got, you know, the podcast, we've got the live stream as it is now and then restreaming it. And then you've got a video that comes out of that.
Yeah.
You know, you could chop it up if you wanted to and do little snippets like little trailers or just short videos.
Yeah.
So you've got different ways of communicating with your audience. But then, you know, the fact that you can communicate across different channels. So you've got your LinkedIn, Facebook and YouTube. But then you've got, you know, you could do Instagram Shorts or you've got podcasts. I mean, podcasts are really popular. I think we've done a few podcasts. We've done podcasts between us and whatever.
Yeah, this is no different to a podcast. This is a video podcast. But I think it's Riverside and Spotify. Spotify, their video podcasting is growing, and the I think it's the most popular streamed content is when two or more people are talking.
Mm.
So that, that except my video, except my live streams, of course. I mean, you know.
But like, but the thing is, they are popular, and I think, you know, businesses are seriously missing a trick, because I think they've put their eggs into this basket over here that says we have to do pay-per-click, we have to do the blog, you know, we have to do like a little short blog. And so you've got the pay-per-click, the blog, and possibly, you know, do an event that's organised by somebody else, so you've got no control over who comes to the event.
Yeah.
And so you're just hoping for the best when you get there. And there's an expression, you know, you get a lot of tyre kickers.
Yeah.
And people that really, frankly, are just, they're wasting your time. We used to call them twats, total waste of times.
Yeah.
You know, people that have no interest will never buy from you, because either they've made a commitment somewhere else, or they're just, they're on a jolly, you know, they're out of the office for the day.
Yeah.
And so I think businesses are seriously missing a trick, because they're not meeting their prospects where they are.
Well, this is the big deal, isn't it? That because there are lots of platforms, that's one thing. You've then got the medium by which people prefer to engage or listen or learn. And so the thing is, it's not one or the other, it's all of them, because at a certain time of day, someone would listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
At another time of day, they might listen or rather watch a video. And another time of day, they might watch a live stream. And another part of the day, they might want to read something.
Mm.
So nobody can turn around and say, oh, we've got everything covered.
Unless you've
got all those bases covered, literally.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, you've got articles and downloads. You mentioned about little blogs. I mean, that's an absolute pet hate of mine, because as businesses, you must not be doing blogs. And people listen to this going, what is he talking? Everybody's got a blog. No, you haven't. What people have been convinced into believing is you have to do blogs. And so what's a blog? It's 3 or 4 or 5 paragraphs, yeah, give or take.
Yeah.
Bog standard stock image. Chuck it onto LinkedIn and ask your staff to share it. So that's standard practice everywhere. And you go, oh no, it's not just that. We've got people doing SEO. Oh, really? Show me. Show me how search engine optimized that blog is. And the reason I'm deriding it, if you understand what Google say with EEAT, expertise, experience, authority, and trust, and then you understand about the really useful content update, you're pretty screwed in terms of content, because your content needs to be 2,000 to 6,000 words long, obviously properly written with H1, H2, H3s, 4s, bullets, bullet lists, number lists, and alt tags for all your images. But it needs to be engaging. It needs to be written by someone that knows what they're talking about. It needs to be sticky. It needs to have the right image at the top. And, you know, you've got to have a leading image. And you can, lots of different things in terms of images and external links. And you think, we've created a masterpiece. You put it on your website and hope for the best. And you go, well, no, it's a bit more. We're a bit more sophisticated than that. We've got a sitemap. Goes in our sitemap. Our sitemap is uploaded. Every time a new piece of content goes in there, our sitemap is updated on the Google Search Console. Oh, well done. Well done. I'm really pleased to see that. And how much stuff is indexed and not indexed? How much stuff is crawled and not indexed? Or even crawled in the first place. We should get crawled in the first place, because it's going to be discovered. But how much stuff actually gets indexed by Google, and how much stuff is not indexed, and why? And the reason you have to understand why is because Google have hundreds, millions of people writing for them. Mm. Google is the platform, not your website. Not even your content. You're writing for Google. Google's customer is not your prospect, it's their customer. Google's objective is to make sure that people receive accurate information based upon the search criteria that they've entered. Who you are is irrelevant. So if you produce a piece of content that is really good and readable and follows their different algorithms, yada, 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 and ticks all those previous boxes, you'll get indexed.
But you also have to remember that you can't put it behind a form because Google can't find it.
No, absolutely, 100%. You can't put it. And you think you've created a masterpiece, everyone agrees it. Now put that behind a form, put it on the on Marketo, Pardot, whoever, HubSpot, and hope for the best. You go, how much traffic are we getting? How much traffic do we get to the website in the first place of people actually looking? I looked at, there was one thing with business process management companies. But BPM is also beats per minute. So you've got people putting BPM, hoping for the best, come up with some company name, get clicks, and people get thousands of clicks, but no business. Why is that? Because it's BPM, maybe. And the problem is that if you've got this web, you have a website entity that's got loads of content on it. How much traffic do you get? How much time do people spend on the page? How much dwell time is there on your actual content?
And well, that's what all of the media platforms are, the social media platforms are interested in. They're interested in dwell time. And it just goes, you only have to scroll through your Instagram. You know, if you've got Instagram and you look at something for more, I mean, there must be some kind of algorithm. If you look at something for more than, say, 3 seconds, it thinks you're interested in that. So it presents it again, because I'm thinking, why am I getting all these? Okay. I'm don't follow anybody that's like that. Yeah, I don't follow this one. But if you understand how the algorithm works, and I think, because on LinkedIn, I don't follow many businesses as such, but there were things that I was interested in following, like Chanel and Audemars Piguet, the watch people, because they did some really nice videos. Mm. And that's why I followed them, because I was attracted by a video that they were playing. Not that I would ever, I'd probably, maybe in time to come, maybe buy an Audemars Piguet watch, but I'm not in the market for it, but I was interested because of the video. And a while back we were watching, or we were listening to something that said, your competition is not who you think they are.
Yeah.
And this guy, I think he was talking about brand, and he said, "This, your competition, you think of your competition as the other people, the people that work in your industry. But that's not true. Because if you scroll through LinkedIn, for example, your competition, or Facebook is another good example, your competition is not the people that sell in your space, the same products that you sell or same software that you sell. It's people like The Economist and The Times and the watchmakers, Seiko.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Luxury brands. But it can be brands that are not luxury brands. It can just be things that you personally are interested in that have, that have that presence on LinkedIn. They're your competition. And if your content is not as engaging as something, say, from The Economist, because they've got a short video that pops up or whatever it is, then you've not got that. That's not your, you've lost them, because they're more interested in looking at that. So you've got to be, you've got to understand that. And if you're providing stuff like a live stream to your prospect, and you know that, because we've not talked about the total addressable market, but the thing is, with the total addressable market, you know, your total addressable market in any given space could be, I don't know, it could be 50,000 customers or prospects that you could sell. So 50,000 companies that you can sell to worldwide, because you've set who you want to sell to. You know, most companies don't have more than a handful of, you know, BDRs, telesales people. How are they ever going to potentially reach 50,000?
Couldn't. It's physically,
it's statistically complete, impossible. Yeah, I mean, it would take them years. It would take them decades. And so with that total addressable market, you know, if you're doing a live stream, you're inviting people to join you on a live stream that they can dip in and dip out of if they want to.
That's what I was saying about the 1,000 people in 6 weeks. So that's what, 150 people a week. Yeah. To get 150 people a week who are interested in watching or listening to what I'm talking about, I would need 150 BDRs on the phone because it's a 300 to 1 shot to try and find someone.
Yeah.
Go with 100 people at 50 grand because you want someone who's fairly decent on the phone.
Yeah.
That's like £5 million a year to employ 100 people, 100 BDRs. It's insanity.
Yeah. The maths don't add up. I think, you know, this medium and then the podcast medium have been able to reach people where they are. You know, are they in the car? Are they watching something in their downtime, even in the middle of their working day at lunchtime or whatever, in the morning when they're, you know, they're just browsing through their social media and they catch 20 minutes of a live stream that you might be hosting or that you've hosted before but is now sitting there on LinkedIn as a video.
Yeah.
You know, you invite people, you can invite people to watch you. And what surprised me actually about LinkedIn is that people have connected with us, people have watched the stream or have said and signed up for the stream that are not first connections.
They're second and third,
So there's an exponential aspect to that.
Yeah.
That as you put these messages out there, that people that you're not connected to will see it. And so that I find that kind of interesting.
Well, one of the things is kind of... on the previous streams that I've done, I'm just going to show you something. On the previous streams that I've done, we've done this kind of format and we've had slides and information and so on and what have you. To show a transition, and I think this is the you'll see what I'm smiling at. So to show a transition from what businesses were doing to what they're doing now. There you go. There's a picture of me and Liz when we first met. I was bigger then.
And I was blonde.
And you were blonde. And so, you know, we're looking at this transition of how businesses can kind of be the same but can look and operate much more smoothly. It's much more smoothly. I can't believe. I mean, you know, we were talking about at the beginning about doing, you know, different things happen to businesses. There's two critical, really, really critical things. So you go, well, it's okay for you. You've got all this gear set up and everything else. So we go back to the beginning. Well, not right the way to the beginning, but as a business owner, it's kind of a bit more serious. As a business owner, you and I go through a lot of grief, not just in business, but externally, because that's called life. So I had lost my daughter. My daughter had died. She had a bicycle accident. 3 years later, I had a quadruple bypass. And 3 years later, I got divorced. And a year later, I met Liz. And that there's a lot of stuff goes on. A lot of stuff happens. It's really serious. And how on earth do people, you do muddle through it, some people don't, but you do, you know, you get through it somehow. But with all that stuff being thrown at you, how on earth do you keep the business going? It's actually nigh on impossible. Unless you've got a good team around you and so on, but that's, you know, the stress is constantly there, you know. Quadruple bypass to confirm that. So this drive at looking at systemizing new business, which is what this is all about. You know, we're looking at how different people react and different businesses react to different things. What do we do when it comes to our business environment? You know, you're touching on how you keep this information out there. And one of the things that we realised we had to do was to have multiple adverts that would keep telling people who you are and what you're doing. And you couldn't use telesales. You couldn't tell people direct. You had to allow them to come to you. Mm. And all the MarTech companies were going, inbound, you know, get lost. It's not delivering what people want. And so when you look at this and realize that you have to create a mechanism that delivers that information and communicates to an audience ongoing, not relentlessly, but consistently. It's got to be consistent, but otherwise it's going to fail.
And that's, I think, is one of the biggest challenges, actually, I think. And I did find that, you know, that consistency is the key.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
If you can be consistent in what you're doing, and it's not just about being consistent in your messaging, I mean, consistent in the activities.
Yeah.
So if you can be consistent and your prospects know that you're going to be, like, for example, on the live stream, that your prospects know that you're going to be online delivering a live stream at 11 o'clock every Thursday, then they know that they can join you. They know that they can,
yeah.
And they can dip in if they've got the opportunity, or they can watch it on catch up, whatever. But they know that you're going to be there. And I think the thing is with consistency, telesales is not consistent. And the reason I know that is, like I touched on, I mentioned it before, that if you have a day off, you lose your momentum.
Yeah.
If you have a week off, you're properly behind then.
Yeah.
If you have 2 weeks off, you take 2 weeks holiday, it takes you a long time to get, not just to get back into the flow of doing things, but you've lost 2 weeks where you can't make that 2 weeks up. We get like 5 weeks holiday. So if you think that that's 5 weeks, and if you're making 300 calls a week, that's kind of 1,500
calls you're not making.
Calls you're not making. If you're sick, so say you have, you know, 5 days. So say you're not working for 20 days out of that.
This is the critical thing for businesses, that, you know, if we look at this kind of stuff and say, right, okay, well, we the company, your company, this company, we're going to do live stream. We're going to do it every week. Certain day of the week, it's going to go out. You might get 10, you might get 10,000, who knows? It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant because you've done the live stream, it's recorded and it's available on Catch Up forever. Yeah, forever. So you've got this situation that you're communicating your message, you're transparent, you're engaging, you're speaking to your prospects on a regular basis. And it takes... I deliberately don't have a watch when I'm doing this, because it doesn't flow and so on. But the point is that for two people to sit down and do a live stream, for it to be potentially watched by every single one of your prospects, and I've just hold that for a second, because prior to that, if you've done the job properly and you've messaged your total addressable market, if you just went with 10,000 people in the UK, okay, you can email 10,000 people in the UK 12 times a month for about 150 quid on MailChimp. That's it. So two emails a week. This is what we're going to do. This is what we did do. This is what we're going to do. This is what we did do. And keeping them informed about what you're doing. So it costs next to nothing to be able to keep in touch with these people. And of those, that total addressable market that Liz mentioned, between 1% and 15% are looking to start their buying journey to buy something like your product.
Every week.
Every single week. And the reason that's, you cannot dismiss this, is because that's why you set up in business in the first place, because you said, you agreed, you've been doing this for however long, that you absolutely understood that there was a market for your product. That's why you're in business. It's nothing to do with me. So you have a total addressable market. You have 1% to 15% that are looking. Who cares? Because if it was 1%, that's 100 people a week looking to buy your product. You go with the list, yeah? 100 people a week. That would cost you 5 million if you were going to employ 100 BDRs. That's really serious. And it's cost you 150 quid to tell 10,000 people, come and watch this live show, and you've got two people sitting there, two of your salespeople. You're telling me you're too small? You can't do it? You haven't got the technology? You haven't got the wherewithal? That's an excuse. Where's my phone? Where's my mobile? So you can use one of these and go live. You've seen it multiple times. People going live on Facebook. Just need a little bit more kit to go live on LinkedIn. That's it. So that's why this is so important. This isn't just, well, isn't that flash? Isn't that nice? No, not at all. This is the most critical methodology and approach to generate, to actually start generating new business that B2Bs have ever had. Don't want to do it? Don't do it.
And I think the thing is, you know, it's about recognising the opportunity that you have now. And the opportunity that you have now is that not many, you know, I'm not aware of anybody that's doing this to reach their total addressable market.
No.
So if you start this now, you know, if you start this now...
Hang on, I'll just change the camera.
You know, if you start this now, you will be ahead of your competition by a mile. In fact, more than that. You know, if you start it now, even if you were to start streaming in, say, the next 3 months, you would be ahead of your competition and your prospects would get to find out about what you are doing in your space, in whatever area you're selling in, whatever product or software or solution you're selling. They would get to know about you first. And even if they're looking at the competition, you just elevate yourself above your competition because you're delivering something to them in a time and in a medium that they want, that they really want. And you can't underestimate the power of that. You know, and we've talked about this, you know, you cannot underestimate the power of reaching that total addressable market every week, consistently.
There's the critical bit, which is how long. Everybody's thinking, how long is it going to take? Oh, you know, come on, snap your fingers. We want deals now. No, that's the crap that you've been told by marketing every time. That's why you've said, come on, marketing, when are we going to get the deals in? Where are you going to deliver the ROI? And that's cost you an absolute fortune in loads of personnel. Goodness knows how much SaaS you've got. There's a quick stat here. There are 30,000 SaaS platforms around the world at the moment, give or take. Half of them are marketing. The average number of SaaS platforms that companies use are between 30 and 70, give or take. But half of them, apparently, are marketing. So you've got this massive annual recurring cost on software and software platforms. You've then got all of your staff and personnel, all of your expense on pay-per-click, and you're still not getting any inquiries on your website. So how long does this take? How long would it take you to buy into something? You're the gauge on this, not this. Because if they're saying it would take between 20 and 30 touches, well, you better get your finger out and get doing this and convert this to a podcast and get your adverts out there. I mean, we're a small consultancy. I've got 288 adverts going out every month across every platform. You tell me you're too small. The difference is, yeah, it took me a bit of time to get it set up. We've got AI, got Midjourney. We've got AI inside of Photoshop and a variety of different things. You can contract that stuff out. I mean, this is, you know, the long-term objective is at some stage you'll say, actually, Nigel, can you come in and have a chat with us about what we need to do? That's for later. But the critical thing is, you've been mugged. I'm saying that businesses, B2Bs, have been mugged about marketing, about digital marketing automation. It's destroying your business. And the reason being is because the strategies that people are using have been designed, were designed for consumers, not for businesses. If you want to buy a pair of trainers, you see a pair of trainers, take out your card and pay for it. Job done. Do something for your company. You want to self-educate, self-serve. And you'll decide on the ROI if you want to buy it. Very, very different. And that's the critical point. And so you need to make yourself available to your audience at scale. And two people can do that. Three's better. Four makes it easier. You know what I mean? Kind of the technical stuff and so on. But there is a mechanism, and it's systematic, because you don't need to blog. You need a certain specific number of pieces of content that represent you and your company. And you can produce 2, 10, 20, 200 adverts for one piece of content. We're only talking of graphic that says, do you want to learn this? Click on that. Not complicated. And each week you can come and meet all of us. You can meet the team. You can meet the technology team. You can meet the support team. You can meet customers. You can meet our partners. You can meet the directors. You can meet the team, the staff, it doesn't matter. There are the numbers of different live type shows you can do are as long as your arm. I'm assuming you've watched television. How many programs are on television? There you go. So lots of different things that you can talk about. And that's the point, is that this is an opportunity for businesses. You know, you've seen the Rogers technology curve.
Adoption curve.
You know, B2Bs have been laggards for goodness knows how long. Now it's time to switch this up. And only certain people are going to do it. Good luck to you. But you can do it by yourself. We can do it with our help, and we'll make it happen quicker. That's all. That's the only thing we've got to offer is speed, because everything's out there. Everything's accessible. You've got all the costs. It's a revenue expense, as you know. But the fact that it can only take a couple of people to speak to every single one of your prospects, no matter where they are in the world. I mean, if you're not enthusiastic or excited about this, sell something else. I mean, but that's it, really. I mean, let me have a look. Did you want to say something?
No.
No? I'm going to put you on the spot. I didn't want to do that. But the thing is that we knew, I think, right back at the beginning, before we did the streaming bit, because I could bring this back to our journey. Oops. Yeah. Bring it back to our journey. So it was in September, and I was asked to go and speak up in Cambridge. And we were coming back from Cambridge, and we were saying, do you know what? I think what we need to do is cinematic quality video. Mm. That's what we needed to do, really high quality video. And so we did that. We went out, we bought all the gear and everything that we needed, learned how to use it. That was a steep learning curve in itself. And we're kind of cutting a story short, but long learning curve, got everything prepped up and ready, put everything out on online, and then there was lockdown.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't believe that's just happened, like a lot of other people. And then sitting there, looking at four walls at the time, I'm thinking, okay, well, what next? And of course, we're into YouTube. We're watching everything on YouTube. New launches are coming out on YouTube. And they brought out one of these switch boxes for video that you could stream with, so you can have multiple cameras. Mm. And I kind of looked at it and thought, I think there's something in this. So we got the first small box, an A10 Mini it was called, and started playing with it and realised, wait a second, this is even better than live than doing the videos, because there's no editing. Mm. You know, we're streaming now. When there's no editing, we set the mics up, the lights, cameras. That's it. It's done. We'll finish. We'll press the button. Stream's over. It's like, wow. And so with a bit of work and planning and understanding how you could do things like that and have all these multiple boxes and use what they call super source and what have you, we kind of got to this point and thought, well, this is the driver or the catalyst that businesses actually need, because from a technical perspective, doing video and lighting for video and editing video and audio is a skill. The skill with this is setting it up. But once it's set up, it's set up. You know, we come in here, press two buttons, one records, the other one goes live. That's it. Okay, there's one or two power buttons we've got to turn on, but that's it. So it's a really kind of important thing to grasp that this is not about making it complex, is it?
No. No, and I think that we're kind of at that place now where if you don't do it, you are definitely missing a trick. You are definitely going to lag behind if you're not already lagging behind. And I think that's the thing. You know, I think companies are more are struggling now to reach the people that they want to speak to. Yeah. And they're, you know, they're clutching at straws, you know, spending more money on the things that they've... And you're seeing diminishing returns.
Yeah.
You know, you're attending events, but the people aren't there. You're putting it out on pay-per-click, but people aren't clicking. You know, or the people that are clicking don't want to fill in forms, so you're still playing for the click.
Yeah.
And so...
And even more and more budget is being allocated to marketing departments, but there's no return. The return isn't there.
And the thing
they're clutching at straws.
And the thing is, they will defend their budget. They will do whatever.
Oh, don't get me. You just reminded me on that.
Yeah, I don't think we have time to go into that. But you know, I just think.
But no, I can't just leave that hanging.
Okay, so defending the budget, is a way of saying.
Nothing shouldn't
have had it in the first
nothing
place.
Nothing should need defending when it comes to a marketing budget.
No.
Ever. Because it's supposed to be delivering what it's supposed to deliver, which is more income, or should I say more leads.
Which are supposed to become revenue.
So you've got all these marketing teams giving it the big one, saying that, look, we're all our KPIs are up and everything else. We're superstars. And salespeople are sitting around going, But where's the business? We've got no leads. How can you be 100% a target and we've got no leads? I watched a video of a guy that was a senior person in Demandbase saying, and listen, if someone's having a go at your marketing budget, leave it to me. I'll come in and defend it. I'll help you defend it. It's like, how arrogant is that? I mean, that just red rag to me, proper red rag to a bull. I was absolutely disgusted because marketing is supposed to create the leads, to engage with to give to the salespeople. Come on, you both work for the same company. Yeah? You shouldn't be enemies. You're on the same side. But they're not. And that's what this is. In a way, this is what it's all about.
I think it's, for me, I think the streaming is, it's putting the sales activity, if you like,
first.
Back, and putting it back in the hands of the salespeople. Yeah. And I think because there is this real...
The giveaway's in the name, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah?
Sales.
Yeah.
Sales, yeah? You sell, do you? Yes, yeah. I sell. But and you do marketing, what you do, business cards.
Yeah.
And they'll all hate me for this. I don't care. I really don't care.
But the point I'm making is that this puts it back in the hands of salespeople. Salespeople talking to prospects where they are.
Yeah.
The salespeople doing, if you like, doing the prospecting that they did back in the day, which was successful because they had control of it right from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I think that is so important for a really good, successful salesperson. They have to be in control of it from start to finish.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the way I see it, because marketers have never sold, I mean, the huge, vast majority of marketers have never been at the sharp end of selling. They've never sat in front of a customer and tried to close them down and do a deal.
And sell the product that they're actually trying to market. Yeah.
So, you know, this puts it back with the salespeople to be in control of who they speak to, how they speak to them, and just reaching those prospects where they want to be met. And I think that for me is the biggest, that's what makes this for me the most important aspect of it.
And
I just think that's so important.
Well, there's one thing about this kind of setup, because we don't do it, but with one more screen, so yeah, you could use an iPhone, but I wouldn't recommend it. But you know, you've got another laptop hooked into your same account, and you can have a salesperson fielding questions.
Yeah,
you do it live. I mean, we're going to do that. I don't know which show it is, whether it's next week or the week after, but we're going to do just a live session. Got any questions? Let's do it live. Let's set it all up and let's see how effective it is for you. I mean, we might be sitting there twiddling our thumbs. I mean, that'd be really embarrassing, wouldn't it? Go, oh, there's no
but
one here.
Not, but you'll never have to not be sure.
Get your mum on there. Go and get her friends. But the thing is that
it's an exciting time because
what I was going to say, just back, where the people that will answer the questions are to be the salespeople that have always been answering those questions in front of customers. So it opens it up to more and more salespeople. And if you've got a very popular type of product, you could have three or four salespeople on answering questions.
And I think the thing is really with this, it has never been more accessible than it is now.
Yeah,
and that's it for me. It's, you know, I don't know all the technical intricacies. I know how a camera works. I know how to set a camera up and so on. But it's never been more accessible.
Yeah.
And it's never been more affordable. You know, your company might be spending 50, 100 grand a year on pay-per-click and you get nothing from it. You know, you could easily kit out 2 studios for that.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And have lots of money left over.
and reach your market. So yeah. I think really that's it for me. I mean, I just think it's now, it's just time to sort of start thinking about it and say, you know, can we use this? Can we, and how, not can we use, but how can we use it?
Yeah.
Because you can use it.
Yeah.
But it's how can we use it and how can we reach our market, the market that we're struggling to reach right now, how can we reach them? What content can we do? And it just gets all those creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because if you're not excited by this, then you shouldn't be in sales and you certainly shouldn't be in marketing.
Yeah.
If you can't see the creative
But it's all about money. It's the ROI. I mean, it's the ROI is everything. Yeah. I mean,
and it does come, I know it comes down to money, but you've got to be able to think of those ideas. You know, we talk about this a lot and we have ideas left, right and centre. And I just think people, you know, you out there, basically you can't afford not to think about it. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
I think we've been talking for quite a long time, you know.
Yeah, I know. So it's midday. Gone past midday.
Well,
it is.
Well past midday.
Oh, 12:28. So that's why we do, because otherwise you get to a point and you think, oh, did I say everything I wanted to say? Did I mention that? And it's just, you want it to be relaxed and you want it to be transparent at the end of the day. I mean, that's it.
I think we did cover everything.
Yeah. We're back again next week. And I think next week, I'm pretty sure next week is for salespeople. It's about how you can set up your own smart studio, as in smart looking studio at home. Because a lot of these processes and engagement is remote, but some remote stuff is pretty awful. So, you know, with that
blurry background
that's moving around your head and so on. So it's about upping your game and maintaining eye contact when you're talking to people and so on, so they can get to know, like and trust you, but on a professional level.
If you're not looking in somebody's eye, how are they going to
I've only got one eye and one away, but you know, you don't want people to be doing that thing where they're looking down and they're just, you know,
they're
facing the camera, but they're here, I love that one, the 2 inches from the screen. So it's really big head and big ears sticking out. But no, that's it from us. I hope you enjoyed today. We obviously enjoy talking to each other.
Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't touch my knee that time.
When your foot was on the foot pedal.
It's bye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.